Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hung where you can see every couple try.
Yeah, I know. Yay, Mac, way to kill Christmas and then try to drag us back into it. Yeah, have some pumpkin pie, do some caroling. Life's not for pussies, man. Joining me is the All Marine Radio head chef who got a new phone this week, started sending me all kinds of goofy stuff. And he joins us now. By the way, he's a big fan of getting presents and Christmas, just in case you don't know. So, Kim, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mac. Thank you for intro with Brenda Lee. Rock around the Christmas tree. Oh, yeah, baby.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, no, I had to try to do something to change the mood because what I just played that I
might... The first hour. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's when you go to teach, you know, you can lecture, or you can talk, and you know, and I'm pretty good at it. You can convey, you know, you can convey stuff, but when you can show them, it's always better. It's always, you know, when they can see it, and they can watch it, and it's always more impactful. So just trying to craft something that communicates, you know, because when you talk about keep your honor clean, you know, their eyes glaze over and like, yeah, you want me to do the right thing so we don't get in trouble, blah, 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 blah. And the answer to that I've learned is no. That's not the primary reason. The primary reason is you have to live with it. And you don't know that sitting here right now. You don't live in that side of the valley yet, but you will someday. And so I just want to give you a little preview so you understand why. And hopefully that'll influence your behavior. So rough stuff, though. Rough stuff.
I thought it was very well done.
Well, you know, and then when you read about...
When you said what you said to me in the text, way to go.
Well, you know, what's heartbreaking is this kid is the son of an X-ray technician in Jackson, Mississippi. All right, Mississippi, maybe the most segregated state in the country. And his mother rose to that level of being a professional, and her son was in his second year of college. That's who he is. And he didn't seek a deferment. He went to serve his country. And left Tennessee State University, Knoxville, and joined the Army. And as fate would have it, fate puts him in My Lai on March 16th, 1968. And when that story, before he shoots the first woman who's holding a baby and running, he looks at whoever's in charge and says, hey, I'm not shooting that woman. And then he gets told, if you disobey a direct order in combat, you can be shot. And then he has to live with the consequences of everything that happens that day. And it's just a horrible failure of the people that are in charge of a young 19-year-old American soldier, and then how that echoes through his life until ultimately he commits suicide. So it's a horrible story, but I think important to retell. Important to retell that story. So that people understand why you do keep your honor clean, why you do the right thing. And so, but it's rough to listen to, man. It is. I watched it yesterday over and over as I edited it, and like, holy shit, man. Holy shit. So, anyway, Merry Christmas to you.
Well, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah. All of the above.
You know, one more thing before we leave that. One of the lieutenants in the company, a guy named Callie, was put on trial. Richard Nixon got 20,000 letters a day at one point saying that Callie was being made a scapegoat for the Vietnam War. his company commander, I don't even think went to trial, or he might have gone to trial, and he was the one that made the statement, you know, men, women, dogs, and cats, they're all VC.
Yeah.
I mean, he just recently passed away, I want to say within the last 6 months. But those guys were never held, as a military professional, right, that's, you can't get more wrong than what they did. And yet the nation did not want them punished because of how the nation felt about the Vietnam War. But to me, it's like, that doesn't, the protests in the United States doesn't have anything to do with this. This is wrong, and they should have gone to jail for a long time. You're a leader. You know the law of land warfare. You've sat through those classes. You know you can't. We're not the bad guys. We're the good guys. And when you cross over into bad guy land, you need to be punished. And so it's the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say, is a confused narrative with a country that's in turmoil, and it doesn't end right. It doesn't end right because the guys who should be punished aren't punished. And so frustrating when you look at it from a historical perspective as a military guy. And anyway, and I know you were alive then, and I know you remember those events and whatnot. But a little bit different perspective, though, when you hear it from his words. A little bit different perspective. Now, we're supposed to transition from this to pie crust. I'm not sure how we do that. But... but we're ballers.
And
we'll
some pictures.
Beth
sent pictures of your mom's cherry pie recipe, and she did it in little individual pie tins. Well, they turned out to be so big that we had to split one. Well, you wouldn't need to, but Beth and I split a little mini pie, and oh my gosh, that pie crust recipe is your mother's. That's what should be on your post on your web page, and it really works. The crust was flaky. Everything was fabulous. And
so Beth,
pretty cool.
So Beth did it exactly by the numbers per that recipe.
And she sent you one from the Silk Palette, which is what she used to do, and that's a pretty darn good pie crust also. I don't think it has the vinegar in there, but that's what we used before you came into our lives. Your pie recipe came into our lives. It pretty much changed the picture. But yeah, it's very cool. Very cool. But I'm really flipping around. I got a wild hair a couple of days ago. What was it? Wednesday. To call my fish purveyor from Port Townsend, Washington. And I've been wanting fresh, raw oysters.
Oh.
Clam and Penn Cove mussels. So I said, do you still ship? And I've been dealing with this lady for 20-some years. And she says, oh, yeah, Kim, we'll ship it overnight. You'll get it tomorrow before 10:30 or by 10:30. I said, yeah, right. Okay. So I ordered some different size oysters, some yearlings. Those are the real small ones, large, extra large, and medium, which are big ones. In different size of bigness, and so they came in little pint jars. I made some cocktail sauce, pounded down a pint of oyster right away. There were only five oysters, but they were big suckers, and just slurped them up.
Did it make you? Did it make you happy?
Well, it made me hard. You know that's what oysters do, brother.
That's supposedly
the liquor. It's inside the shell. It's called the liquor, and I drank that too. I've got a couple, and I'm going to fry and bread them, and I will do that. I'm going to they freeze really well. So I'm going to freeze 2 pints. And then when my friend gets home from Denver, Chad Kaya, you know him, I'm going to do some fried oysters. But tonight I'm going to do mussels. And I'm going to put a little garlic, a little bit of wine, a little water, and the mussels in the pan with some herbs, a blend of herbs that Beth made, and no salt, and put the lid on them, and some diced tomatoes, real finely diced tomatoes, and then steam them. And then when the shell comes open, I put a tablespoon of butter in there to richen it up, and a little parsley. And then I slurp them down. And I've got enough for, I usually eat about 1.5 pounds of mussels at a sitting.
Whoa.
That's what we used to serve at Sanders. You've had the clams the same.
Yes.
And then I ordered 3 pounds of clams. And I'll probably freeze some of those for him.
So what brought that on?
I just got this wild hair. I wanted some. I'm out here in the middle of nowhere. And I just got this rush. I always made oyster stew at Christmas. And I wanted some raw oysters. And now the waters in the Port Townsend area are icy cold. And so I dialed it up and got them in. And I'm very excited about my weekend. And Sunday, I had a dish when I had the Blue Parrot restaurant in Port Townsend. And I would get these little shuck yearling oysters, and they'd be in a jar, and they're just fresh as can be. And I'd put them in a little saute pan with a little garlic and butter, clarified butter, garlic, and I'd start browning them. Then I'd throw these yearling oysters in the pan and just quick, you know, warm them up, because you just have to cook them and get a little bit on them, maybe a minute, saute them. And then I add eggs, 2 scrambled eggs.
Whoa.
And
touch them all.
It's called a Hangtown Fry. the trade name for it in the kitchen. And I don't know if you've ever had oysters and scrambled eggs.
But never,
it's
never.
Pretty darn wonderful.
Never.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my. It's a shellfish weekend for me.
Yo.
The mussels don't freeze well, so I'm going to eat
those. Yeah, then that means you got to eat those. You got to eat those, right?
The clams freeze well.
Email for you. Mac, I'm curious, does the chef have any other Christmas specialties that he particularly enjoys? I enjoyed his discussion about eggnog last week. I'm a fan. I'd be curious if he has any other favorites. And again, I know he struggles with talking about his own favorites, but that's what I want. Not things that he likes, but his favorites. Yeah. What about your favorites, man?
Well, for an entree, my very most favorite thing at Christmas is standing rib roast, prime rib. And I like it to fix it just like you have the recipe for. But I do a small version. And I do it 2 ways. Sometimes I'll have the butcher leave the bones in. And, you know, it'll be like three ribs. So that's about a 6-pound roast. And then I dress it just like it, and I put it with the ribs down in the pan and the fat cap up, and then season it the same way you do our prime rib, which is on your menu.
Right.
And then for Christmas dinner, it's another meal that I like to do ahead of time. So I like twice baked potatoes, and I can make those up a couple days ahead, and they turn out real well. And then you just bake them off for about 20 minutes to heat them up. You know, when you put them in the oven, you sprinkle a little Parmesan cheese on the top, and that'll crust up, and that's good. And I also like, I do a baked cauliflower where I take the whole head of cauliflower and I kind of cut out the core, the stem area, and leave the head intact. And then I put them in about 1 inch of chicken stock, and I poach the cauliflower till it's about 2/3 of the way done. There's still a little crunch. Your oven has been preheated to 325 to 350. And then I take that out, and then I thicken. I put some roux in the chicken stock, in the chicken stock, and thicken that. And then I'll add a little bit of whipping cream to make a stock.
If there's a common thread that runs through many of your dishes, one, there's a little crunch.
Yeah. I don't like overcooked food.
There's a little crunch to it.
There's meat or vegetables. The cauliflower, you have a little crunch in it because you're going to bake it. You're going to pour this sauce over, and you put it in a baking dish, and you pour this sauce over the cauliflower, and then you cover it with a mixture of grated Parmesan cheese and breadcrumbs. And I'm telling you, with those three things, you're in the front row.
But just so you know, just a little bit of a trend. Cream appears in the things that come out of your mouth a lot. A little bit of crunch appears in many of your recipes, and a little bit of hot. What do you call hot? A little bit of, you have a word for it. I can't remember what you say.
The best.
A little bit of heat.
Heat.
Now, I'm not sure cauliflower is the appropriate place for that, but some trends in the chef's recipes, just for the record. So anyway, baked cauliflower. All right, that's another one. So any other seasonal treats that you like around this time of year?
Well, I like to do a tiramisu.
Tiramisu. I told you, I need to get that song. There's layers to the shit player. Tiramisu, tiramisu. That's a rapping cook someplace who wrote that lyric, man. That does not just fall out of the sky. So tiramisu comes up for a second week in a row. How about that?
Yeah. Now, with tiramisu, you take mascarpone cheese. That is a Italian cream cheese, and you can do a sweet or a savory. But for tiramisu, you make a savory. So you added powdered sugar or confectioner's sugar, what it's called, to get the desired sweetness you want. And then you take ladyfingers.
Ladyfingers.
Little cookies.
Yes.
The finger, you You know what I'm talking about?
I do know. I didn't know. I do know. After I told the story last week, but I waited annually at a benefit that Kim would have. And but I wanted to be a good waiter when I showed up. I didn't want to be an idiot. And so Kim and his guys would sit down with us, and you would have one waiter that helped you. But I wanted to be able to recite what was offered on the menu that night. But I had no idea what tiramisu is. Right? It took me a few minutes to pronounce it right. Tara what? Tiramisu. And then they had to explain it to me. And then I think they took us back and showed us a little bit of it. So, yeah. So I do know what tiramisu is. I didn't, but when I became a waiter, I did. Disconnected himself. You disconnected yourself? What happened?
You hear me, Matt?
I can hear you, yes. Can you hear me?
Hey, Matt.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Sunshine. Can you hear me?
I don't know what's going on here with me.
Oh, my God. we were rolling along there. Hold on. I will try to call him and see if that works. Hello? Hello?
Sorry, buddy.
Can you hear me?
I'm here.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, barely.
What happened?
I don't have a clue.
We were rolling along there. Everything was everything was working swimmingly, and all of a sudden you vanished.
Back on track.
Oh.
We're back in tiramisu heaven.
All right. Don't touch the phone anymore.
Yeah, it's a new toy, and I just screwed it up. Sorry, folks.
That's all right.
Lady fingers.
Wait, hold on. In the middle of the week, all of a sudden, I start getting these emojis, all right? And they're like, from Kim. I'm like, what the? I look down, I've got like four text messages from him. I look, and I'm like, so I sent him a text message. What the fuck are you doing? He's like, hey man, I just got a new phone. I'm testing it out. I said, all right, you need to stop. It works. Stop it.
I was test driving it.
Test driving it. They're complicated devices, man. I mean, it's not a phone anymore, man. It's a full blown computer and everything else.
Oh my God! It freaks me out, but I'm making a maximum effort. When we get off the air today, I've got an appointment with my Verizon woman. Beth and I are going down.
And you're gonna get a class on how to operate your phone.
Yeah, pretty much that. Yeah, for me, she's good. She's got game.
Beth does.
I'm the lame stuffer.
No, let me tell you, there's a lot to them, and but you know what? It's your phone now has more computer power than the Apollo air, our Apollo, space capsules had, and like that is freaky, man. Because at the time you're like, you saw all those, and what were all those switches for? You know, you're like, oh man, how do you know what's going on with all those switches? Back to tiramisu. So,
but number one, I'm just going to tell you what I do. Every Italian grandmother has her own best tiramisu recipe ever. I'm just going to give you the way I was taught by Mama Lola when I worked for her in Italy. Now, you take the lady fingers, you lay them side by side, and you put a mixture of espresso, strong coffee, and you can use whatever booze you want. It can be Zambuca, it can be bourbon,
ooh,
it could be any liqueur, Grand Marnier, Cointreau, it does not matter. It's what's your favorite. And if it's a, like a rum, I like rum. That's kind of good, too. But you don't want to get it too strong booze, but you want to have the liquor flavor in there. And then you put this mascarpone with the powdered sugar mixture. You spread that over the top. And you pour this coffee and booze mixture. You just, you don't soak the lady fingers with it. You just kind of sprinkle it over the top because the lady finger will absorb that coffee and booze. And if you put too much, it'll just get mushy. You want it to still have a little texture when you cut into it.
Okay, so how much, so when we pour this glaze over the top of the ladyfinger, does it look like the back and forth kind of chocolate, the kind of chocolate drippings or like strawberry drippings that you would see over the top of a piece of cheesecake?
Yes, pretty much. You just drizzle it over the ladyfingers. And then you add another layer. You add a layer of the mascarpone, sweetened mascarpone. Then you put down, press in lightly, press in another layer of lady fingers, and repeat this process. And you do it, three times. Three sets of lady fingers. And then the very third one, you put mascarpone mixture should be about a half an inch to an inch, depending on how high you want this. A layer each over the lady fingers. The very last one, you put about a half an inch mascarpone, and then you take grated chocolate, and it could be any kind of chocolate you want. It could be milk chocolate. It could be semi-sweet. But you grate it. And if you don't have a grater to do it, put it in your blender and, you know, pulverize it. But don't turn it into a powder, just so you have some chocolate chunks. And then you totally coat that top layer of your tiramisu. And kind of tamp it down just a little bit, and there you go. And that can be made the day ahead for Christmas dinner too. So there you have it.
Tiramisu, and you know what, you don't see it. You know, not that many people make it. Maybe it's pretty commonplace in Italian families. But in the rest of us, it's not a common dish that you see at all. And I thought it was supposed to be made with a certain liqueur, but now that you say that, I mean, so seasoned to taste, huh?
You can make it with amaretto. You mix, but it has to have I use espresso coffee, which, you know, you want that dark, thick. You don't want a weak coffee. You want a very exceptionally strong coffee. And the mixture is probably two parts coffee, three parts coffee to one part liqueur. And you can use that amaretto. You can use limoncello. Whatever you want, I would suggest a liqueur on the sweeter side, and I'm sure everybody out there has one. You could use Bailey's.
Bailey's. I'm a fan of that. That's one of my drinks.
Yeah.
When I'm really hitting the booze hard, as I would at Kim's place, I would have a gin and tonic, right?
Yes.
And normally with hors d'oeuvres, I would have a glass, and people would make fun of me. I would have a glass of white Kim's House white Zinfandel, Behringer white Zinfandel, white Zin that Kim served, and then I would have Bailey's. That would be me, Mac hit. That's how I'm like, oh, Mac's hitting hard tonight. That's what I would drink. That was it. So
that's put you in the front row, brother.
Exactly. That was me hitting it hard. And I could drink Bailey's. I've never gotten drunk drinking that stuff. I imagine there is liquor. First of all, it's not cheap to drink. But you know, you put it in with some ice, and it's for me, it's kind of like drinking Pepsi, although I don't consume it as fast. But you have crunchy ice and Bailey's, and you drink it together. It tastes good.
Yeah, it does. When I sold the restaurant, I ordered some booze. I ordered a bottle of Bailey's and a bottle of Godiva.
Godiva. What is that? Like Godiva chocolate?
Godiva chocolates. Well, they make a liqueur out of that, and it's killer. But it's very sweet, just like Bailey's. And I thought. I haven't opened them yet. That's been 4 years. They're still in my cabin. So the next time you're in town, I'll pop it for you for Bailey. And we can get small.
Oh my God! You know, I have great memories of my my former father-in-law who passed away. But we would go to midnight mass. We'd come home, and he would. He would break out the brandy. Okay. And he had a hollow leg. He's 6'8". Kim met him. And he was in San Luis. And Dr. Donald J. Drake. Anyway, he had a hollow leg. People would try to drink with him. And they would all, they'd be like beer cans on the floor. Like you'd be stepping over the bodies, and he would be just going fine. And so, have you ever seen the game Connect Four? It's in this little plastic vertical thing, and you just drop like checkers into it, and you essentially play tic tac toe, but it's a much broader grid. So you know the game moves around kind of the tic tac toe thing. So we would play this stupid tic tac toe game starting at like 2 a.m. drinking brandy, and then him talking shit, which he didn't do very often, but he would. And he could drink brandy. Like, I drink brandy by the little sippy, whippy.
Yeah.
He would drink.
He'd look it down.
he would bomb it. And you'd look at that, and he'd go, oh, that's so good. And you'd think, dude, you have no hair in your nasal cavity, because that stuff will burn it straight out. And he just go on talking shit and playing Connect Four. And I have the best memories of I wish I could have drank Bailey's. I could have at least looked more sociable and drink, because that drinking brandy, man, I don't know how people do that. That stuff's rough. That stuff's
Well, you have to drink the high end stuff. I can't drink it anymore, but I used to drink a lot of it. That was like your father-in-law. Cuvassier? I mean, what is that? The high-end one. Cost $1,000 a bottle.
Oh, what?
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
I remember working at the liquor locker in San Diego, yeah. California when I was in college. Liquor store. First time I ever had an experience with anybody ever on crack, cocaine.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, the guy was Hercules, man. His friends tried to try, you know, and the owner of the liquor store, he was clearly on something. And so, we weren't allowed to sell booze to drunk people. And he was way... And so he starts getting rowdy, and his friends tried to get him, like, out of the liquor store. And he grabbed one of them and threw him against the wall. And this dude wasn't a big dude. I mean, he was like, he had the strength of 10 Grinches, man. And the owner came out and grabbed a baseball bat. I was like, oh, shit. But the garbage men would come in at lunch and buy Courvoisier. Put it in a brown bag. Put it in the brown bag, and then back to work. They would go, and they would do that. I don't know, two or three times a week. What's going on, boys? Hey, Mac, what's going on? Coming in for a little lunch.
Yeah, a little liquid fortification.
Exactly, and but God, how do you drink that syrup?
Oh, jeez, it's called. Louis the 13th, Louis Trick, Louis the 13th, and it's the top end from Courvoisier. It's the top of the line, and they were going to double the price. It was normally $350 a bottle. This is back in the early 90s, and so they were going to double the price to $700 a bottle. So I bought six bottles. They came in six packs. And I bought a case of the Courvoisier, and it's in a Baccarat crystal hand-blown glass decanter. I had it, and I gave one to Bob, and I had one upstairs that I'd have a little shot when I came upstairs after work every night. And but yeah, that's good stuff. But I can't drink that stuff. It's too hard on my system.
Oh man, it's gone by.
I have it in my cabinet. I don't have the Louis the 13th, but I have the XO, the one just below Louis the 13th, which is a few hundred bucks a bottle. But I haven't consumed it. I don't drink it. I have it for guests who want some high end stuff.
Hello. The here's an eggnog question, Mac. I listened last week. And I'm glad the recipe's up there. Are there things that Kim would tell you to stay away from? Because my family has a few different versions of eggnog. Is there anything he would say to stay away from relative to eggnog?
A poorly made eggnog. I mean, it's got to taste good and rich. And if you want to judge your eggnog, you know, if you're not making it yourself, check a high-end eggnog from the grocery store. And it's the thing with eggnog, making an eggnog cocktail, is if you're going to add booze, the art form is not to add too much booze. You want to know you're having a little alcohol in there. You want to get a little kick from it, but you don't want to ruin the taste of the eggnog. It's supposed, the eggnog accentuates the booze.
So it's a common, you know what, I that to me is a common mistake bartenders make when they make drinks. They make them too strong. And so, and I'm being a fan of the gin and tonic. The what I love about that drink is the blend of the lime, the gin, and the tonic. And there's a taste that a great drink has. When the drink is overpowered by the alcohol, it's not the same drink anymore. And so
no, it's not. to somebody trying to get hammered. And I mean, that's the whole thing about, you know, have two cocktails, but have them properly made. You'll get the same jolt. It's just be able to relax a little bit longer and, you know, and enjoy the flavor, the total flavor of what you're drinking. That's the whole thing about bartending is, overpouring is, you know, all they're doing is trying to increase their tip and cost the owner of the joint money. You know, when I worked in Switzerland, Mac, I had to buy each bottle of booze from the hotel. They kept all the liquor down in a little cage, and I had a little sheet, a little booklet that I had to add. I had to tear off a drink and stick it on a spindle.
Wow.
And 17 drinks in a bottle, and you paid for 15 drinks is what the bottle cost you. So, and then you got two free drinks out of each bottle. So you had to pour exactly what it was. Otherwise, you're ending up paying for the drinks. So I never gave squat away, and I measured it out. And then when, you know, the end of the year came, I got 15% of every drink I sold. And then as a bonus, they gave me 10% of the volume I sold.
Wow.
You had to measure everything out. It was an ounce and a half. No more, no less. And so, I have a little side story for your listening audience. Where I worked in Switzerland, the year I ran the bar at night, there were 26 little bars in this village and not one bottle of tequila. And this is 1972. And I said, well, Herr Brunner, I want to order some tequila. And he says, well, how many bottles you want? And I said, oh, I need a case. And he looked at me and he says, uh-uh. We've never sold a case of any liquor in this hotel since it was built. And I said, well, you know, I'm going to have to order it soon then. He says, I'll let you have three bottles. Well, 2 days later, I said, Herr Brunner, I'm on my last bottle of tequila. And he says, let's go downstairs and count the tickets. So we went down to the cellar and counted the tickets and matched everything up. And he says, geez. He says, well, you can order six bottles, but you're going to have to pay for these bottles at the end of the year. I said, Herr Brunner, I need a case. And he just looked at me and shook his head. And 3 days later, I came to him with his daughter, who was the general manager. And I said, Margaret, you got to back me up here. I said, Herr Brunner, I need a case of tequila. And so we went through this whole process of matching up the tickets to the drinks. And he said, okay. And at the end of the year, I sold 10 cases of tequila. And the next year, I sold about 15, 16 cases. I don't remember. But you know those glass boots that people drink beer out of in Germany?
Yes.
You've seen. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I used to fill them up. Ski schools, I knew all the ski instructors, and the trail down to the town was, they'd had to go skate by my hotel, and the hotel I worked at. And I'd fill that boot with a tequila sunrise. And, you know, it'd take a half a bottle of tequila. 10, and I used to get just ski classes just crushed. But that's why I was sold so many tequilas. And then I introduced them to shots of tequila with a lime and the salt and a beer back. And by the time I left in 75, every bar in Vegas had tequila. All 26 of them had at least a bottle or two of tequila.
So there's people in Switzerland that owed their tequila habit to you?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, congratulations on that, by the way, spreading a little bit of international cheer around the world.
Oh, olé. That was a fun time. But yeah, it's eggnog is something that, though, flipping back to eggnog, it depends on, measuring your booze. You know, shot and a half, I mean, an ounce and a half in a 8 ounce cup of eggnog on the rocks is perfect. That's it.
All right. The you said that Matt, could you ask him to repeat the cooking instructions for the rib roast that you talked about earlier in the program? You said it was one of your favorites to do for Christmas.
Yes, it is.
So talk about it.
Okay, you. On your web page, you have the seasoning blends and how to dress a prime rib. Okay, but I use 3 or 4 bone standing rib roasts, and you put the bone side in the pan in your roasting pan, and you of course let the roast come to room temperature. You dress it the day before. That's another step out of the way. And you cover it tightly with saran wrap and let it marinate in your fridge overnight. You preheat your oven to as hot as you possibly can. Now, it's winter time, so I cook indoors. You also have instructions for cooking it outdoors.
Right.
But I'm going to give you the indoor version. And then you crank your oven up as hot as it'll go. And we're talking about a 6 to 8 pound roast. And you put that in the middle of your oven. And you cook it as hot as you can for 45 to 50 minutes, and then you shut the oven off and do not open the door for 1 hour. Capiche?
Oui.
1 hour. And then you open it after an hour, and you'll have beautiful medium rare in the center and medium on the outside. And what I like to do with the bones is I'll cut the roast off the bones and leave a little meat on there. And then you have ribs for a little, barbecued ribs. And you just
nice. Listen to that.
Yeah, and then that's another meal. And four ribs, you can 2 ribs a person. I mean, this is prime rib we're talking about. They're brontosaurus ribs, so it's not these little delicate little St. Louis ribs. These are beef ribs.
These are manly ribs.
Yes, they are.
Exactly.
And But that's just an extra little bonus that I like for myself.
All right.
You know, you just cut the prime rib off when you're ready. And if you're going to do the twice-baked potatoes, you pull that out of the oven, and it's still hot as a pistol. And you cover it with aluminum foil. You set it on top of the oven and throw your cauliflower and your twice-baked potatoes in. And it'll 20 minutes later, then you're good to go. Okay?
There you have it. All right, sir. First of all, thank you very much for the visit today. I appreciate it. I apologize for being late. And good luck with your phone lesson and your new phone.
Well, we're heading there right now, Matt.
All right.
And I'm very excited about my new tool.
All right. Well, pay attention. Don't get distracted. All right.
All right.
All right. There you have it. Tell Miss B we said hey.
I will. Merry Christmas to everyone. Happy holidays. We'll see you next Friday.
Yeah. And, Christmas on the way. There you have it. The one and only All-Marine Radio head chef here on a Friday. Don't touch that dial. The Gunner joins us next as we continue on a Friday edition right here on your home for it, the All-Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.